do it while it's fresh. So while you try to get your brains around some of the statistical modeling of that first presentation, I'm going to ask people to also think about the ways that these different presentations tie together. And it's going to take some stretching. But they're actually all important. No, not because they're so disparate, but because we have a complex web we're weaving together here in this session as well as this healthcare system. So the next one is entitled Unfulfilled Promises of Quality, Building Patient-Centered and Equitable Health Systems in California. And Ignatius Bao is the project director of the California Endowment. Okay.
Thank you. So this presentation is a little bit different, not only because it's largely qualitative, but it's coming from the perspective that I bring, which is that of a funder rather than of a researcher. And to share a little bit about the strategies that we have tried using as a funder, as a private foundation, and some of the lessons that we have learned. So we begin in terms of the title of the presentation of really focusing on patient-centeredness and equity as two of the elements in the Crossing the Quality Chasm scheme. And obviously the other important Institute of Medicine report in terms of equity is the unequal treatment report. So this is our very broad mission as a private foundation. We're about 12 years old, and we have this very broad mission of improving health and improving health status. And so the first strategy, which is actually perhaps a bit ironic for us as a state-based foundation here in California, is that we have tried to engage national organizations in this work, recognizing that a lot of this policy and systems work doesn't happen in Sacramento and doesn't happen in the state, but happens across the industry. And so just to give you an indication of the kinds of things that we've tried to support, which are important for these issues, our work at the Institute of Medicine around this particular topic and a report from this workshop will be coming out sometime later next month. With the Joint Commission, they engaged in a research project with about 60 hospitals across the country, really trying to learn from the hospitals, which was a unique thing for the Joint Commission, rather than going and surveying or accrediting the hospitals, really moving into a learning mode and saying, well, what are you doing to take on these challenges of culture and language, and have developed two reports which try to give back to the field, particularly to hospitals, what the Joint Commission staff and research team learned. The first one is a general overview. The second one really highlights some promising practices. They're not quite sure they're best practices or evaluated practices, but at least some promising practices that they heard about. And then there's going to be some subsequent reports, one on leadership and one on really tracking a hypothetical patient, modeling or simulating the Joint Commission's patient tracer methodology of saying, if a patient presented with language and culture issues, how would have that hospital dealt with this hypothetical patient throughout the entire process of care? Similarly, with the National Committee of Quality Assurance, they've looked at some research that they did themselves, and then in a very creative way, oftentimes we talk in terms of moving policy and systems change between carrots and sticks, incentives and disincentives. And so this was really an incentive program of recognizing health plans that were coming forward with, again, what they would nominate themselves as best practices for addressing multicultural health, culture, language, and health disparities issues. And now there's actually a third round and a third report that will happen, and some 30 to 40 plans that have been really recognized by NCQA for excellence in this. And this lays the foundation for NCQA now to propose some actual accreditation standards based in large part on these awards. Similarly, the Joint Commission, through a project funded by the Commonwealth Foundation, is also going to be looking at developing some accreditation standards as well. And then finally, the National Quality Forum, which often tries to pull together what is going on, is beginning to start to look at this. And this draft framework is out for public comment, and I would really encourage you to make comments on it, which are due November 5th. So in California, what we've tried to do is really engage different sectors around these issues of patient-centeredness and equity And we've begun with hospitals and health systems, and these are some of the systems that we've worked with, which represent some of the major nonprofit systems, probably about a third of the hospitals represented in California. We've also worked with public hospitals and health systems, and then had some technical assistance by the association and by Health Research Education and Trust. And these are some of the findings that I would summarize in about 5 years of experience with hospitals and health systems. One, it's really important to start with data. That seems elementary, but again, until the hospitals themselves really start collecting data about race, about ethnicity, about language, and start looking at their disparities, they don't believe that it's an issue in their hospital. You're going to hear this theme over and over again. So data collection really, really is important. And the good news is that most hospitals, in fact, are collecting the data. The bad news is they often have either IT issues or other issues to actually access the data and actually utilize it rather than have it sit in a separate database that they can't actually use. Then secondly, I think we've realized that there can be various places in which change can start. It could be a medical director, it could be a nurse, it could be the CEO of the hospital that says that this is a priority, that these issues are priorities. And that oftentimes what will happen then is that you've got to move that change agent throughout the system, either moving it up and managing up, or across the system, or in the case of the CEO or leader, it's pressing that change down. And as that change moves throughout the system and that change agent moves throughout the system, inevitably you're going to hit the finance people, and then you're going to have to make the business case on why you need to do this. And so sometimes that depends on who that initial change agent is and their capacity to actually make those cases. And what I end up saying is you really need to make the multiple cases. You need to make the patient safety case, you need to make the business case, you need to make the patient-centeredness case that regardless of what we do, this is best for the patients. I think you can make a quality case for addressing some of these issues. And I think, again, you really, at that point, as you're trying to make those various multiple cases, need both that change agent to continue championing and pushing those agent changes, but then you also ultimately need, in the hospital parlance, the executive sponsor, somebody that ultimately you can call the question and say, this person is really behind this, and therefore, that's why we should do it. And as you find allies and build momentum, eventually you can develop a standard of practice. And I would be happy to say that based on some of the evaluation that we've done in the hospital world, is that at least in terms of language access, I think we've evolved into pretty much a standard of practice in which data is being collected about language needs, in which the hospital recognizes that you just can't pull the housekeeper in to provide language services, that they have to do some assessment of what their staff capacity for language services are. Almost every hospital uses some sort of telephonic language line, so making sure that people know what the language line is, how to access it, make it easier to do that. And then at least make some attempt to match those patient language identified needs with either the staffing needs or with the language line or some other services. So to me, that's a huge sea change over a couple of years in which people would say, language services, yeah, I think there's a telephone line somewhere. At least again, hospitals really recognize that they need to take these steps. What they haven't done is the last step in terms of quality, which is then actually looking at those services and seeing if in fact the matches are being made and if in fact those services are being provided and what quality they have. So then let me move to health plans. These are the local initiatives, which are the Medicaid managed care plans in California. And we've also, again, worked with NCQA and with the Center for Healthcare Strategies on some of these issues. And the lessons from the health plans that we've worked with is, again, the health plans generally collect this data. If they're a Medicare plan, they actually get it from the file. If they're a Medicaid plan, they also get it from their state Medicaid office. And more health plans are actually initiating their own collection of race, ethnicity, and language data, which is a good thing. So again, that barrier of why should I do this is sort of overcome. The question now is, how do you actually use and own the data, as I'm saying here on this point? And then I think beyond that, plans still have this division between what they can do internally with their staff, with their member services staff, for example, with their clinical staff that's in the plan itself, and they'll do training and they'll have them look at disparities and they'll design disparities reduction projects versus what they can support their provider network, which is really where the care is being provided. And how can they push that kind of training out? How can they push that kind of QI support out into the provider network is really a challenge for the plans. But I think the plans are moving beyond those basic language issues to taking on some culture issues and ultimately to taking on some disparities reduction issues. I think the plans that are succeeding are integrating these functions within quality improvement rather than as culture and language or as customer or member services or as marketing. It really is becoming part of what they want to be known for in terms of their quality. And I think what many plans still need to do, and we haven't quite figured out a way as a funder how to engage them, is how do they facilitate the actual involvement of their members as well as their purchasers, the employers that are using those plans as incentives again. Then in the world of physicians, and these are a grouping of physicians, the network of ethnic physician organizations that we're fortunate to have in California, 44 minority and other ethnic physician organizations, as well as the real involvement of some of the primary care physician organizations and the California Medical Association, as well as the American Medical Association on some projects that we've brought in. So here are some takeaways from the work that we've done with physicians. First, we get this really, really very, very strongly from physicians once we begin to engage them on these topics, which is, I treat all my patients the same. And so why are you talking to me about these differences, either in disparities or in terms of culture and language? And I think really helping physicians at a practice level, which is really the core of quality improvement, to look at your panel, to look at actually what's going on in your hospital, to look at what's going on in among your members in your health plan, even for physicians to move to this population and community level analysis, that it's not just the individual patient in front of them, but it's their entire panel of patients and how that contributes as a subset of the larger population and community. I think we need to be careful, especially for those physicians in private practice and solo practice and small group practices, to balance that sense of autonomy that they want to be independent, they want to be small, they don't want to be dictated to, they rebel against what the plans say, versus their sense of they really want what's best for their patients. And how do we then use that altruism of really wanting that high sense of quality to actually get and use some help. And so what we found is, again, it's not an IT solution because a lot of these physician practices aren't ready for the electronic medical records. And simple registry, simply computerizing with Excel and Office is going to be enough. That a lot of it is basic practice management, scheduling, flow, patient management. It's really using their staff that, again, even if they're small, really figuring out how staff can be a resource. So one of the big takeaways around language access is that there was high turnover of the support staff, of the medical assistants, of the receptionists. But again, when they saw a diverse patient population, they never thought of maybe I should be recruiting somebody who's Spanish speaking the next time I have an opening. It just didn't occur to them that that would be something. And so they just continue to struggle and sort of point fingers and say, well, nobody's helping me with language access, while they might have this built-in resource. And then finally, it's really important to improve communication all the way around. That one of the things that we learned in the quality improvement projects that we did do in these physician practices is that it improved the communication between the physician and the physician's office staff. That for the first time, it really empowered the office staff to talk back to the physician, to push back a little bit, and also to say that the communication that takes place with the patients doesn't all have to be up to that physician, that there's a lot of health education, there's a lot of follow-up, there's a lot of other work that other staff, medical assistants, the nurse, whoever else is in that office can capably do with training and supervision that the physician doesn't need to do. So what's the best and most efficient and highest use of that physician time? So let me skip over some of these tools which are on our website and talk a little bit about patients and health consumers. I think the last part of obviously patient-centeredness is how do we actually engage patients in their own care? And so it's clearly in terms of language access, I think what we've have tried to do is put those tools into patients' hands, but then that's often very unrealistic in the face of systems that don't have those kinds of services for patients to assert those kinds of rights. And so we've also engaged ethnic media in doing some public education. So again, if you're trying to reach diverse populations, especially in multiple languages, ethnic media actually has built in that capacity to communicate in multiple languages, and I would encourage you to use that as a strategy. And then finally, the strategy, and I'll end with this, is as a funder, we've also realized that we can't do this all within the health system, that there have to be community partners that are much closer on the ground that can naturally organize those patients and those consumers. And so we fund a wide variety of community-based organizations to be those patient advocates, to be those patient navigators, to use community-based approaches like Promotoras to really reach those patients and get them engaged. And how do we now translate all that kind of work that we've done, which has largely been around health promotion and health navigation, to actually move them towards quality? And that's going to be the big challenge as we move forward. Thanks.